go on chanting the whole time. That'd be nice service. Please pray with me, O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Dearest Mother.
Saints and sages of all religions. I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Bliss. Amen. As many of you know already, our dear friend Swami Vishwananda just recently left the body at 95 years of age. And different thoughts and memories from the storehouse come out. And what a wonderful individual he was. He described when he was a young man, I believe he was just 17 years old, and he was attracted to saints, and he went to see Ramana Maharshi, the great jnani. And he sat there for 1 month, and it is said, and as Papa wrote about, that the glance from the master had this tremendous uplifting power. And he sat there for a month waiting for just even a glance, just a few moments of the master looking at him. He never did the whole time. So he walked away and he said he was young, a young man at the time, but it was difficult for him to understand. And then he came across Papa's books and started reading about him. So he was in Bangalore and decided to walk all the way to Anandashram, be several days walk at least. And he had some money with him and he took off. And within a day he had lost or his money was stolen, either one. And he thought, well, I have to return back now. And he thought, well, what would Papa do? And he'd been reading In Quest of God and the Vision of God. And he said, of course, Papa would just keep on going and he would be chanting and he would trust that God would provide for him. So he did so, and he had a long journey of it, but finally he arrived at the ashram, and Papa welcomed him and offered him some tea and tiffin and asked him if he'd had his meal. And he said, no, Papa, and then at some point he described what had happened in terms of his money and that he had continued on. And Papa looked at him and said rather shockedly, No, you should not have done that. That's a very dangerous thing to do. But he had done it anyway, and he had come all the way. So he started to become a regular visitor at the ashram, and he loved Papa and he loved Mataji. And one day he said to Mataji, he kind of cornered her, and he said, I need a special blessing from you. And only you can give it to me. No, you seek blessings from Papa, not from me. No, only you can give me this blessing. She said, well, what is it? He said, I want to look upon all women as divine mother and not see them in any other way. You must give me that blessing. And so she smiled and she gave him that blessing so that he would see all women as divine mother. And then one day he was coming by the train to the ashram, and he got out at Kanangad, and he was on the by the train station there, and he saw that there was another young man who had gotten off the train there as well, and he looked a little bit bewildered, wondering how to get where he was going. So he engaged him and talked to him, and the man said he had come to the ashram for the first time, and at that time there was no auto rickshaws. either you walked out to the ashram or you engaged a bullock and a cart to take you out there. And so they started walking out there and finally arrived at the ashram there. And he said that that young man that he met there was Swami, eventually became Swami Satchidananda. And it was his very first visit there. And he had ushered him out. And he just seemed to have this knack for being in the right place at the right time and meeting extraordinary individuals. When Ramana Maharshi left the body, he was elected as one of the pallbearers and taking the body to the fire. And when he took us to Nandish Ramana Ashram, they treated us very, very well due to being in association with him. And he was with us as we toured in pilgrimage all over India. And he was Brahmin by birth in his caste. He said that his aunt would have said that he would have been polluted just traveling with us as Westerners, but that he was he saw beyond all of that, and he was very, very generous with his time and with his friendship. He said his wealth, his single wealth in this world, was friends, and he had many, many friends in all echelons of society, both in the mundane as well as in the spiritual. When we went to see Satya Sai Baba and Puttaparthi, that because we were with him, we were ushered around the metal detectors and the long lines that were required to get in to see him and taken right up to the front in order to have his darshan. So we have so many lovely thoughts and memories of Swamiji, and one of them was when we were going around Arunachala, which is the hill near where Ramana Maharshi was. And Arunachala has been known for hundreds or thousands of years as being a sacred space. And he had a song that he sang as we drove around this mountain. And I hear that song, hear him singing it even now, and just know that he must have been met by Ma when he met Anandamoyi Ma, all the great saints that he met. But when he met Ma, she was his guru. And he took her as his guru. And any time that he would be speaking of her, his voice would start to tremble, tears would start to come down. And he just had such devotion and affection for Ma, as well as so many of the great saints. So we will miss him, but we know that he is one of those individuals who just had great vitality, tremendous memory. He could just rattle off what year it was, what month, what day it was that we had done a particular thing. And he just had a tremendous memory in that sense. And we very much appreciated all that he did for us. I'd like to read to you from the Vision magazine, Words of Beloved Papa Swami Ram Das. And this is entitled, What a Leela. Sometimes Ram Das wonders why he should go on writing and for whom. You will, of course, say that the devotees like to read Ram Das poems and articles. If they really like them so much, why don't they practice in their own daily lives what Ram Das tells them in his poems and articles? Sometimes Ram Das gets letters saying how much some devotee or other enjoyed reading the latest issue of the Vision, and how wonderful Ram Das' article was, and so on and on. It seems as though they feel that Ram Das does all the writing only for compliments, and that having paid the compliments, the devotees can go on doing all the things they have been doing, chasing worldly pleasures, making money by hook or crook, in fact, doing everything except remembering God. Ever since Ram Das started talking and writing, he has been dinning into the ears of one and all, give up selfishness, give up the feeling of I and mine, and surrender to God. Will anyone listen? You know, it is like going to the temple daily and making a ritual of your worship. You take your anna's worth of flowers and offer them at the temple, and with due ceremony, like covering yourself with vibhuti, and so on. Worship the deity and pray ardently and long. And what is the prayer? Dear Lord, give me a better job. My superior in office is a rotten fellow who can never understand what merit is. Please see that he gets his just desserts. Next time when my boss gives increments, let him give a double increment to me only and overlook my rotten superior to teach him a lesson. And even after offering a prayer of this kind, the devotee tells the Lord that he is his ardent and true servant. Is that worship? Fie on such worship then. God asks from the devotee nothing but love for his fellow man. You shut your doors on your fellow men. You regard only your family circle as yours and all others as outsiders. Is that love? If, after all these years of listening to Ram Dass and reading his writings, that is all that the devotee does, then all that he does has been saying and writing is in vain. No wonder Krishna Bai sometimes gets so exasperated that she asks Ram Dass, why did we ever start this ashram and for whom? We wanted the ashram to be a place where people will come, leaving their cares and their pettiness behind, and gathering together, remember God. In the early days of the ashram, what great pains did Mataji take to create ideal conditions for sadhakas to engage themselves in sadhana? She saw to it that they had their own rooms provided with sattvic food that a sadhaka should eat and asked them to be as much as possible in Ram Dass' company. Why did she do it? It is because she or Ram Dass wanted Is it because she or Ram Dass wanted ceremonial worship from anybody? Or because Ram Dass wanted somebody on the other around him to dance attendance on him all the time? No, it was because the company of saints and God-realized souls are the greatest opportunity in a man's life to progress toward him. And Mataji was anxious that none should be deprived of the golden opportunity. It was for this and this reason alone that this ashram came into being. Otherwise, Ram Dass and Krishna Bai should have continued their way in their itinerant life as carefree children of God. But what do you all do on coming here? You bring your own bundles of worldly cares and pursuits, open them here and air your grievances against one another. There are some who even want to reform us, tell us where we have gone wrong, and to convert us to their points of view. What a leela of Ram this is. We all need a stern upbringing at times in order to self-correct in life. Without this sort of self-correction, we will wander toward the ego. It's the greatest gravity due to the fact that we have lived with this ego, sense pleasures, and this world for so long. Even if we are disgusted with this world, we are still attached to it. Disgust shows an attachment. Even as hatred, even as love, even as obsessions, it all shows an attachment toward this world, positive or negative, high or low, good or evil. If we are to really make progress on the spiritual path, we must really take ourselves in hand. Our own thinking habits are so easy to follow and fall into. They're like ruts in the road. If you have ever driven upon a road that has deep ruts in it, it's easy when you're going along just to have the tires slip down into those ruts. It's a very bumpy ride then. And then perhaps you get tired of being down in the ruts, maybe a little concerned where those ruts are going to take you. So you hit the gas hard, you turn the wheel hard, and you pop up out of that rut. And then you're up above it for a little time, but you get a little bit careless, not strictly paying attention to what you're doing. And what do? You fall right back into the rut again. And if you're not careful, you'll just remain there. And how many times do you have to hit the gas and turn hard on the wheel to get yourself out of there? If you are true, if you are sincere, if you are really making an effort, you smooth the road out, you get out of the rut, you get onto the surface, and eventually the road gets smooth once again, and you get rid of the rut. Because now the default that you have is God remembrance, surrender to God, love of God, service of God in all things that you do. Once you have achieved that, then it is just a matter of keeping yourself on the road and not allowing yourself to fall off. And you could only fall off if you made a deliberate effort to do so. The great saint, Anandi Moy Ma, came into this life. She said that she was fully realized when she came into this life, that before she was born, she was the same. After being born, she was the same. As a young girl, she was the same. As a young woman, she was the same. All her life, she knew who she was. But there was a period for 7 years that she allowed herself, or deliberately put herself, into a state of ignorance so that she could practice sadhana. And she went through many various types of sadhana in order to find out what it was like to be in a state of ignorance, to make the effort, and then come into that state of realization. And in that way, she could better serve those who would eventually come to her. And she would know what it was like to have to strive, to suffer, to feel the aloneness, the abandonment, and all the other things that ignorance brings to us. What a wonderful, wonderful soul. And Mother, before she came into this world, was fully realized, fully realized. There is no mark, there is no stain, there is nothing more that she had to do. But she volunteered to come back to this earthly plane, as avatars do, in order to be the example and to bring great truth, great light into this world. And so it was with her. And she went through a very, very long time. She wasn't born into this life with total knowledge of who she was. She was different from Anandi Moy Ma in that way. But it's only the form that a real master chooses to take. And so she struggled for so many years. She had family. She had children. She had so many difficulties. She worked in this world. She went through all the things, she said, that any woman, any person would go through in this lifetime. And so she had to struggle with it all, and she had a difficult time of it because she came for that purpose. But it was at the time of meeting her master that she really got awakened in that sense to the path, to striving. And yet she still felt like she was always God's littlest one, that there was no one that was as small as she was. And so she strove and strove, and she was so dedicated and so loyal to Master through all those years. And you can imagine, 1920s, 1930s, that if this path that we follow is relatively rare today, how much more rare it was at the time. And her father had come to live with her and her family. And he said to her, her father was half Native American, but he said to her, "You would follow that old Indian anywhere," referring to Master. And Mother said, absolutely she would. So she got no support. She got no encouragement from anyone around her to stay with Master, but it was just so strong inside of her. And she felt that Master was Christ come again. She just so adored him, so loved him, thought so much of him. And she naturally thought that the Master knew every moment, every second, everything that she thought, everything that she said and did. Later on, she came to realize that in a human sense, there was no way that Master could track her that in that way. Excuse me. Excuse me. But that God gave Master knowledge of whatever it was that Mother needed when he would see her or when he would contact her. And so she continued to follow with him all of those years, and Master gave her such love and such upliftment that Mother was just in awe that he would even know who she was. And it wasn't perhaps until many years later that she met a great saint. And that great saint said to Mother, "Why is it that you think you're always God's littlest one? Do you not know that you are greater than any saint that you have met in this life, any saint you will meet? Why do you not stand up and say, 'I am that I am'?" And Mother said that it was some time later that she was in her condominium and she stood up and she said those words, and she said the experience that she had was tremendous. And even though she was in a fully realized state, somehow some veil, some shadow dropped off of her that she had carried with her all of her life about being just a little one and that she was somehow inconsequential, even though that would have been very difficult for any of us who were devotees of hers to believe, because she was such a powerhouse of God. And yet this is what she said. And the explanation is that even a fully realized soul will have to carry some veil, some ignorance with them in order to be in this world. Otherwise, they would just simply be in the oneness with God, and there would be no separation whatsoever. There is this wonderful book, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Swami Satchidananda put this together. He translated some of the texts. And it's many stories about Krishna, and in this one, Krishna is instructing Uddhava. And Uddhava submitted, "O Kesava," speaking to Krishna, "I wish to know about that form in which you taught the yoga of Samaka to his three brothers. And when you did so," the glorious Lord replied, "Samaka and his brothers, the spiritual sons of Brahma, the Creator, asked their father once about the unfailing and highest consummation of yoga. Samaka and others said, 'The mind is attached to the sense objects, and the sense objects influence the mind. So, for the seeker of liberation, how do they act and react upon one another?' The Lord continued, 'Thus interrogated, Brahma, the great God, the self-born creator of all beings, could not get, in spite of his deep thought, at the root of the question, because his mind was on work. Brahma then fixed his mind on me, with a view of getting the hidden meaning of the question. Then I appeared before him in the form of a swan. Beholding me and placing Brahma at their head, Sanaka and others came forward and, bowing at my feet, asked me who I was. Being thus asked by the sages, who were all eager to know the truth, I answered them, 'Now hear from me, O Uddhava, what I spoke on that occasion. O sages, if your question refers to the Atman, then the reality being one and undivided, such a question is inadmissible. On what ground shall I, the speaker, stand? Since the bodies of all beings are composed of five elements, and since they are same in reality, your question as to who I am is indeed a mere effort of speech and hence meaningless. Whatever is grasped by the mind, expressed through speech and perceived through the faculty of vision, nay, even with the other senses, is but myself. There is nothing other than me. Know this as the result of inquiry into the truth. The mind is attached to the sense objects. The latter influence the mind. Thus, the sense objects and the mind both constitute the body of the jiva, or the soul, who is ever identified with me. The mind, which through constant dwelling on sense objects is attached to them, and the sense objects which influence the mind, should give up both, being identified with me. And so here we hear from the great Lord that when you enter and merge into that identity with the oneness, all questions of I and mine, thee and thou, they all disappear. There is nothing but God. There is nothing but oneness. You merge your little self into the great ocean of what God is. When you do that, you surrender yourself, heart, mind, and soul. There can be nothing that is left behind. There is nothing that is reserved as your own. As you give, so shall you receive. In order to know God, you must surrender to Him, wholly, completely, without any reservation whatsoever. Who will you be? What will you become? Where will God take you, if any place? All of these questions must be surrendered at the feet of God. Will I be in control of myself? What will happen to me? You do not know the answers to any of these things. There is a kind of hypnotism that happens in this life, where we just move simply from day to day. We get up in the morning, we have a certain routine, we do the things that we do. And the day proceeds like that, and some days are better than other days. But very rarely do we question, who am I? What is my purpose here? How do I achieve this total state of realization? Rather, we just simply tend to bumble along from day to day without any real effort, without any real thought as to how to get realization. In order to be really serious on this path, we must come to that state of total and complete surrender. There's nothing that stops you, even in this moment, from doing it, other than the mind, other than attachments to the things of this world, the senses and the body. We have all these concerns for ourselves. And yet, when you read the lives of any of the great saints, is there one of them, even one example in all of this world, of one who has ever completely surrendered to God completely and lived to regret it? Who said, I made a mistake in doing so. It was the worst idea I ever had. Now, when God picks them up and takes them at their word and puts them through certain experiences, they may feel at times they made a mistake because life can be difficult in that way. But there's a price to pay, but what kind of price do we pay by just remaining in this world, remaining in ignorance, not experiencing the upliftment, the light, the love, the bliss of God? When you look within in your mind's eye, and you see the great God dwelling within, flashing like a light of lightning, illuminating your entire whole being, lifting you up, making you feel at one with Him. Yes, whatever price you have had to pay, you do not count it as anything against having that state of realization, freedom, bliss, eternity, all at your feet. Because as you give, so shall you receive. When you give God everything, God gives you everything in return, and the greatest gift that He can give to you is Himself. He gives you His consciousness, His power, His intelligence, His awareness. You give Him of your tiny little self, He gives you His great infinite self. Why would you think that that was a poor bargain on any level at all? It is not. But we must wake up. In the Vedas it says, awake, arise. We must be jolted into it. That's why many times, because of some trauma that we experience, is what starts to wake us up, shake us to our clinging to this earth. It creates a crisis of sorts. Sometimes people are put into a crisis mode. And not hard-heartedly, but because I know there's something greater, I think, good, good. It's time to wake up. It's time to stop clinging to the little trivialities of this life. and to awaken to the greater nature. So this is something that God puts us onto the path. He begins to think of us. In the Vedas it says, you could not think of me if I did not think of you first. And so God begins to put his mind upon you. His quickening spirit begins to work inside of you like yeast inside of a bread. What do you need to do? You need to keep the oven warm in order for that yeast to rise within the bread. How do you do that? God remembrance. God remembrance. Keep your mind on God. Love God. Serve God. Think of him. Make him your friend. Make him your greatest resource and ally in this world. And when you do so, then he begins to truly awaken himself in you. That yeast begins to rise and the bread of realization begins to rise within you. And then the fragrance of God begins to exude itself all around you. Now you can kill that. You can turn the oven off by getting too focused on this world, by getting too consumed with the things of this world. And then the oven begins to cool and the yeast begins to die back. It's not that it's not there, it just begins to recede. It's not active anymore because the oven is cooled. So we have definitely a part to do. But it is not something that we can do of and by ourselves only. No way. We absolutely need that Christ seed that becomes the yeast inside. We could do nothing without it. And God sowed it in the first place. But as we keep that love, that devotion, that desire for God growing and growing and growing inside of us, that oven heats and heats and heats and the bread rises. And finally, one day, the aroma of realization begins to exude itself all throughout you. The loaf is complete. And you are now one and merged into God alone. Now God may leave you there. There are some people when they have achieved that realization, many people, when they have achieved that state of realization, they simply drop the body at that time. When I was in India and we were visiting what is designated as Babaji's cave or Lari Mahashai, is identified by his son as being the cave where Babaji had initiated the master. And there's a great space there that where nothing grows. And it's said that that's where the castle was materialized. And whatever the truth is about it, I've been in that cave a few times. And every time I have, it's been tremendous, the power of God in that cave. It sounds like a funny thing, perhaps, that a space like that can be so charged, but I just simply sat down in that cave and my mind merged into an eternal state of consciousness without any effort at all. It just simply happened in the moment. But at the end of the cave is walled off. And it is because there was a yogi who crawled back into the inner recesses of that cave and he left the body there. And so they walled it off because that dead body was found there. But you know, there's times when yogis have come to that state of realization and they just are ready to simply drop the body at that time. It served its purpose. It served what it came to do. And they really don't want much more to do with this world. Not at all. So they merge themselves into the eternal nature of God, into the consciousness of God, into the bliss of God. And they take no more expression in an individual form or sense. They don't want anything to do with it. But there are others who are like Mother. And she was lifted up after having this great state of realization. And she said in that vision, she was taken up above this earth. And she was looking back down on this earth. And she saw the strife, the warfare, all the suffering, all the ignorance, everything that all this world goes through. And her heart went out to this world, and she thought, how can I just leave it behind like this? I cannot. And so she knew in that moment that she would come back to this earth, in order to serve, in order to let God's light and power and intelligence shine and broadcast itself through her. But even as Papa talked about here, yes, you can speak the truth. You can give the greatest teachings. But unless there are those who are willing to pick up their cross and follow the Christ, of what good does it do? If you read a spiritual book and you are entertained and uplifted for a little while, but it has no lasting impact on you, does nothing to awaken you, really, it doesn't, then what good is that? What good is it? And if we do not have that desire for God, then we must pray for it with all earnestness, with all our will, with all of our heart. We must implore God to give us that kind of desire. Wonderful story of the guru who was asked by the disciple, what does it take in order for me to realize God? I've been doing all of these practices and I want God so greatly. But it doesn't seem like he comes to me. And so the guru said, come with me, my son. And he took him down to the banks of the river, and then they stepped out into the river together. And he said, now come, just put yourself down into the water. And when he did it, the guru took his hand and he pushed the disciple's head under the water. Well, the disciple at first, he thought, well, this is interesting. I wonder what my guru is trying to show me here. And a little bit of time went on. He started running out of air and he grew desperate for getting some air. But the master's hand was resting on his head and wouldn't let him come up. And pretty soon he was fighting for his life. He just had to have any gulp of air at all. He couldn't stand it anymore. His lungs were about to burst. And finally the guru let him up and hauled him off to the bank, and he was gasping. And finally he calmed down, and air started flowing more naturally in him. And the guru looked at him in his eyes and he said, when you want God just as badly as you wanted a breath of air right there, then you will have him. Simple, huh? Just like that. Just like that. So we have this desire for God. We must amplify it. We must make it grow. We must make it a powerful magnet, that God finds it irresistible. It is said that God has all power over everything, but there's one thing that makes him helpless, and that is the love and devotion of a devotee. God cannot resist that one. And when that love and when that devotion has grown to such a great degree, then God must come to you, must reveal himself to you. Mother used to pray, Lord, reveal thyself, reveal thyself. She was so desperate, so wanting that realization, so demanding. Nothing else would do. Nothing else would suffice. Now, she still lived in a body. She still lived in this world. She still ate food. She still went places and talked to people. But that great, great desire grew so much in her until it was all-consuming, and she knew that she wanted that more than anything else in this life. So we come to that point. We come to that point in life, and we get that experience. As we read about in the autobiography of a yogi, Master seemed to come with that kind of desire so embedded in his own self. I wanted to read you a little bit. For what religion are you best suited? This was a talk he gave August 25th, 1946. Knowledge of people is derived through psychology and phrenology, study of the head. But these various sciences are liable to bring about a wrong conclusion. Man cannot always be judged according to his appearance. Socrates was the ugliest looking man, but he was Socrates. Sometimes the most beautiful man or woman is a snake. It is very difficult to diagnose people by their facial expressions, etc. Reason is based on certain data furnished by the senses. In hermitages, we try to iron that anger and misunderstanding out of people. There must not be anything that can be discussed here, as there is the basis of relationship in hermitages. Then misunderstandings cannot arise. Some people always want to win any argument. Let them win. Don't argue with such people. Because if anyone has made up his mind to win, why should you argue with him? Wise men discuss, fools argue. Remember that. Wise men discuss, and fools argue. Control of speech is most important. Lots of times you say many things that are unnecessary. When discussing anything, always come to the point. Don't waste time. Lots of times you write pages that are unnecessary and beside the point. Most of the time when people write to me, they fill several pages. I read such letters last, because you go through the whole letter and then the person doesn't say what he wanted to say. That is true. That is true. If you are to the point, then your letters receive quick attention. One famous woman writer, after writing a letter, used to put at the bottom of the page, P.S., if I had more time, I would write less. That is a very beautiful thought, because you can condense your thought and bring it to a point. But come back to the subject, like become like little children. Don't try to analyze others. Unless you are about to start a business venture with a new partner, then you should find out if you and your partner agree in most things. Unless there is that friendship, no interchange of qualities is possible. And that friendship is missing in most family life. They own each other. They live together, and yet they are so far apart. Because if they don't know how to behave with each other, they only deal with the words and a certain expression of the face. If there is sincere dealing with people, you will see how wonderful you get along with them. So don't try to study people. Change yourself first. That is what Jesus did. As one saint said, wanted reformers, not of others, but of themselves. Wanted reformers, not of others, but of themselves. As soon as you change yourself, you change others about you. All great masters change themselves, and that is why others around them change too. And it leads me into a wonderful little book that Larry loaned to me, The Dadly Virtues. The Dadly Virtues, and this one is by Larry Miller. It's a compilation of different writers. And he's talking about when he grew up, he's Jewish and lived in the New York area, and apparently kind of a rural area where he lived. And that they built a temple. First of all, they started out in a house. And he says, I suppose that house was small and the rooms were small. But as a child, I didn't even notice. I loved that house. And to me, that house was the best temple. But eventually, they built the temple and people came and inhabited it. And so he's talking about what kinds of things his father taught to him about love of God and prayer. And he's talking about the temple. We did so much in that temple. Every time there was a war on Israel, we would all get together in the sanctuary and pray, and then raise money for an ambulance or medical or military supplies right there. And the rabbi would pass the news on to us from the pulpit. You know, folks, this was years before any place like CNN or Fox News. And I remember how close all all we were to get the news together. Who was wounded? Who was missing? Who was killed? News had never felt like that since. I think I'd like to experience news again with everyone all together. I learned to pray in that temple for my father, and that's the point. He's the one who taught me. The best lesson was always being at service with Dad. He and Mom are passed on now, almost 20 years. Every Sunday, I would go early with Dad, and we would plop ourselves down as close to the front as we could get, and when my mom and sister would join us later. I'd like to get up and move to the back or stand along the wall. Here's another reason it was special. Dad was self-taught. He never grew up knowing Hebrew or ritual, but a lot of any man's relatives, But a lot of Mom's relatives wore black hats, and Dad started teaching himself, which is actually kind of amazing. And it's not an easy language, but he learned everything. Sure, his pronunciation was off, and he wasn't very rhythmic, but I loved hearing him. And he wanted my mother to see, and he wanted my sister to see, and he wanted our neighbors to see, and he wanted God to see. There was an extra special reason, too. He wanted me to see. No one had taught him, and he wanted to teach me. He wanted his son to respect him for praying well and knowing what to do, and I did. He wanted to be a father who taught his son. Showing your children what you look like with prayer on your lips and building a house that reflects your beliefs are very important things to do. This is how you teach. If there is a God, and there is one, by the way, he probably won't care how many card tricks you taught Junior, but he might care quite a bit about what you taught your kids about him. Your kids will learn how to teach their kids. Who knows? Many years from now, you might just get a nice, comfy cloud thrown up there from God. Pop prayed with all of his heart, but everyone at the temple always knew he was there because there was one tiny problem. He was completely tone deaf and couldn't sing a lick. I'm telling you, folks, not a lick. Nothing wrong with that, and he wasn't shy and loved to sing out in the congregation. But at the end of the day and at the beginning and in the middle, too, I bet he never hit one note right, not even close. How bad? Sharp blasts of a foghorn across lonely midnight water would sound nicer to you than Dad praying. One of our famous family stories was how Daddy, the sweetest man I ever met, saw the singer Vaughn Monroe in a restaurant, and he got up from our table and he knelt down behind Mr. Monroe with a big smile and sang a few lines from Racing with the Moon. Monroe turned to my father and says, "You make me feel secure." Wasn't going to compete with him for his job. Dad taught me to pray. He taught himself, and then he taught me. He taught me how to see and feel the synagogue. He taught me that you can always talk to God, but in the temple, he's so much closer, and you don't have to shout. Dad didn't have a good voice, but he always would say, "God hears me, and he knows what I'm saying, and that's all that matters. Just make sure he hears you too." Then he'd always smile. So listen up, all of you red-blooded guys. You want to teach your kids manners and study habits and how to hit a curveball? Fine. But these things are nothing, nothing, if you forget your first job and your first job is to teach them how to pray. Make sure he hears you too. Let the little boy see you close your eyes and speak to God, and let him know you mean it. Teach him that your church or temple is not a candy store or a sneaker shop. Teach him to understand what's holy. Teach him to stop before entering the sanctuary and think, this is God's house. We built it, but it's God's. We printed the prayer books, but they are God's. When we sing, it's really God's voice, not more. When we come to listen, God has come to speak. These souls are I'm tearing up here and I'm not able to read these words. So I'll have to just leave it there. It's just so moving to me to think of this man reflecting back on a little boy as a little boy and learning all of these things from his father. So let us as parents, let us as adults, because we're always teaching, all of us are. The words that we speak, what we do, what we say, it matters. It matters. And for us within our family to pray together as a family, to talk to God. I remember being as a child and at times feeling so alone, so different from everyone else, and not always knowing that I could speak to God, that I could know God, and that God would speak back to me. What a tremendous thing if we do nothing else but give our children that knowledge, that thought, that concept. And of course for us as well, to take it and translate it into our own lives, to reform ourselves first, to change ourselves first. Do we talk to God? Do we love God? Do we seek him out? Maybe in those times when we wake up in the middle of the night and maybe there's some worries, maybe we feel like life is just too much, not sure that we can do it. Do we turn our mind to God then? Sweetly, lovingly, with the trust of a child, opening ourselves to his ever-presence. So let us remember that your life is not just lived for you, but as you reform your life, as you transform your life, you are going to affect those people around you, whether they know it or not. Whether this man's father ever realized the tremendous impact he had upon his son. And to know that God is with you, God is with you. As I've mentioned a few times, this year has been an interesting time as I have felt that death has been stalking me in some way. I've not felt that it's been a death of the body in that sense that's imminent. Once when I was in India, I was told when you turn 60, then it's like the clock starts all over, the cosmic clock, the astrological clock starts all over, and you get a second life, so to speak. But through this year, I've been having an experience, and I've just felt as if the fuel tank has just gotten down and down and down and more empty. And God's kept me active, and any time we've come together and he's spoken through this form, I feel him fully, I feel him completely. But in between times, I've just felt that there's something that is draining out, and that there needs to be a time of finding what it is that God wants to create in this form, but perhaps he needs to disassemble everything that's there first. So I've just been following along with him, and I have complete and 1,000% trust in him and what he does. And so, thankfully to both Carla and my parents, we've had some inheritance, which has allowed us to buy a house and Just recently, we also bought a recreational vehicle. And God has prompted me to take a trip. Carla said that for her birthday, what she'd really like is to travel around the United States. And so we're going to do that, and we're going to be leaving this fall and to travel around. And I've just felt, and God just, not this morning, but yesterday morning, was talking to me about being out in the desert and having that time, and perhaps it's through that time. And I remember when Master spent a lot of time going out to the desert, and Mother spoke about going out to the desert, and perhaps that would be the place that she would write. And never quite happened in that way, but she talked about it on different occasions. So I have this feeling, I don't know what it's going to be. And that's the great thing about surrender to God. It's like being with somebody, or being perhaps when you were a child and you were with your family, and if you had that kind of feeling towards your family, you're just happy to be in the car and going someplace with them. And you felt complete trust. Wherever you were going, it was all right, and perhaps it was going to be some fun and some adventure along the way. So that's the feeling that I have. I don't know what God's going to do. By definition, in a way, when he empties you out, it's a complete emptying out. And then, if it's his will, he reforms a new container and he fills you up in a new way. And what that will look like and what form that will take, I don't know. We plan on staying in contact through Skype and through Ustream, and to connect with the different centers and so on, and to keep that going while we're on our journeys. And certainly you'll hear from me in terms of the postings that we do and that kind of thing. So I was torn when God was starting to prompt me in this direction. And of course, I take my vows to Mother very seriously about being God's minister and serving you all in the way that we do. But I feel like that the first and foremost thing that must happen is that I must follow God's direction at every moment. There can be no other alternative. So while I will miss seeing you, and this is not the last time we'll come together, but while I miss seeing you and being with you in the familiar ways that we've come, I know that God is about to bring something wonderful. I don't know what that will be, but I know that whatever he has in mind, of course, it will be wonderful. And so as we travel, we'll take you with you, and we will stay connected through the various meetings of the centers and through the postings. So I wanted to tell you all, it's just all fairly recently all forming. And you never know with God, you know. He can pick you up at a moment's notice and take you into brand new adventures. And so to feel that we are alive to God in that way, and to feel that he is guiding and directing. I remember when I was working at a certain counseling organization that I was with for 13 years I was there. And sometimes the idea would come, is this where I'm supposed to be? And God would very definitely say, yes, stay here only. Stay here only. And then what I didn't know was that when he took me out of that, he took me out of that whole world of business and counseling and so on, and put me into a brand new life. So, you know, you never know when God can just change your life quite radically. Or he may just have you exactly where he wants you. And he says, stay here only. Trust in me. Trust in me. If I'm prompting you to be here only, and this is exactly where you're meant to be, then work your hardest to fulfill what it is that God wants from you in that place, in that time, and trust in him. Trust that if he's brought you there, it's perfect for you. Trust also that if he's brought you to any point in life, that he will provide whatever is needed in order for you to accomplish everything you came to do. Now, it may be in life that we are never wealthy or famous or some of those things that some people yearn after. But that's not what it means to have a successful life in God. To have a successful life in God means by the time that you leave this body, you rise up above this body, above this life, above this world. You are with the great light of God within you. And if God within you says, it is good, then you can take complete satisfaction in that. Complete satisfaction in that. So live for that only, to please God. To please God 100% in all of your thoughts, all of your actions, and everything that you do. And when you please God, you will be pleased. You will be fulfilled. You will have everything that your heart's ever desired. You may not think that sometimes. You think, oh, life would be so much easier if I had so much more money, or if I had this or that or the other thing. But that is just simply the ego. Go inside, find out what God wants for you and for your life. And if you're fulfilling that, good enough. Good enough. It's perfect, right as it is. So if you struggle with that, self-correct. Self-correct. Get yourself right back on the path and love God only. Will you pray with me, O Heavenly Father? Divine Mother. I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Amen. Pranams, I bow to the great light within you.